I saw that episode and have a beard and I'm a fat guy, so I have a lot of opinions.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we're joined by our good friend Joseph Scrimshaw. Joseph recently appeared on Tabletop with Will Wheaton, and he tells us about that experience. Will Wheaton, guys, he's kind of famous.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick. I am joined, as always, by my fabulous co-host, Molly Glover.
That's me.
And Nick Glover.
I'm that one.
You are that one. We are also joined by a frequent guest and our good friend, Mr. Joseph Scrimshaw.
I exist.
He does.
I can prove it. I'm seeing it.
And we are here at Convergence 2015, recording in the beautiful hotel room studios. Once again, you were here just last year.
Yeah.
It seems like only... Only 365 days ago.
Only 365 days ago, I was on the edge of your bed, Tim.
You'd be surprised how many guys say that to him at Convergence.
Yeah. Would I be?
And we are here today to talk about Tabletop, specifically the web series by Will Wheaton, on which you, Mr. Joseph Scrimshaw, appeared very recently.
Yeah, just like a month and a half ago the episode was released.
A month and a half ago, you were playing a game called Concept, which all of us have played.
Yes,
and we'll talk
I love that game.
Yeah, it's a really good game. And but we wanted to talk a little bit about sort of the nuts and bolts of making Tabletop. Certainly Molly can address it a little bit from being involved in the gaming industry, and you, Joseph, can address it as having actually been on the series. So... why don't we start with, how did you end up being on an episode of Tabletop?
Well, I'm pals with Will. I met him first doing the Joko Cruise, when we were both performers on it, and we've become friends, and my wife and I are friends with both Will and his wife, Anne. My wife, Sarah, was the person who made Anne feel comfortable to finally join Twitter. Because it always kind of scared her, and in general, she was like really trying to be more comfortable with geek stuff since it was such a huge part of Will's life. But Twitter was like that. I don't know. It just seems
is
like
is she not really much of a geek? Is she?
She hadn't been. She is now.
Okay.
This was like this was about 3-4 years ago.
Sure.
And Sarah kind of talked to her through, like, oh, this is how you can use Twitter like this. You can use Twitter like that. So,
yeah.
Anne joined Twitter and is now very popular and awesome on Twitter.
Yeah.
She is. Yep.
I follow her.
Yeah. So we're friends, and I'm also friends with one of the producers named Boyan. So we talked when I moved to LA. It would be great to be on this new season that they're starting up, and I was.
Wow. So you just were like, I want to do it.
And this is season 3 of the show, right?
Yep.
It's been going on a while.
Yeah, and I mean, they won't have just any Yahoo on who has their email. They want people who are used to, who are performers on some level.
Right.
So they're able to, they want people who are performers, who know the geek world, and who know and like games. So they're able to play the game, enjoy it, and be natural, but still be performative.
Right.
Watching people play board games, I mean, if anyone's listened to any of our episodes where we've recorded while playing religious board games knows that it's not super entertaining without a lot of editing on its own.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of hemming and hawing and, figuring out your turn or thinking about it. I mean, Concept, by its very nature, is a game that requires a little bit of thought and thinking before, putting out your pieces and kind of establishing your guests for other people.
Yeah.
So you go in, and they've got Tabletop as a set. And I mean, what's the process of shooting an episode?
So when you first get there, you go through with the producer, you play the game and talk through the game, even if you've played the game before, so you can think ahead a little bit about knowing the game, so there aren't a lot of like rules questions kind of things while you're shooting. And then for Concept, and I think that's the way they do most of the games, play the first half of the game, take a break, play the second half. And if there's like a problem, the director or producer will like stop and address it. But for the most part, you can just play. And they're okay with it if you do a take to the camera every once in a while. But it is designed to have that balance between being, hey, it's just some friends playing a game, and also being aware as a good performer of like, I'm still, people are going to hear this and want to laugh and want to be engaged. So they really focus on also like be sure to like tell the story of the game in a sort of good balanced way as you play.
Right.
I know, and encourage the things that make gaming fun in real life when you have like the dumb rivalry or the one part of that game that you just like obsess on.
Sure.
And those things that make a
Don't
game.
Don't be a
fun
kingmaker, Joseph. You know, like, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. My good friend Pat Harrigan and I used to play a Lovecraft game called The Hills Rise Wild, and you know,
mm-hmm.
we developed all those little obsessions. There was one time where I had two of my weird cult guys hide and not participate in the game. And it made Pat really mad, and he just kept yelling, "Those two guys! Those two guys!" So tabletop just encourages those little moments, like things like, that's honest, that's real, that's how we all play games, but it's also the things that make them pop.
They would love to watch us play Magical Athlete, because we have rules for, if you've ever played Magical Athlete, there's little characters that have powers, and one of them is the Siren, and her power is whenever she draws every male character toward her, but we had a house rule that if you're playing the Siren, you have to make it the sound, you have to sing a siren song. Just sort of became that.
Yeah.
That's the siren.
Like,
oh, that entrancing music. I must go to it.
Just the least enticing whale walrus noise.
I think
possible.
Most gamers have that. Like, they have, like, the people who would call themselves gamers have the little house rules and the funny things they do. So that's it's cool. Tabletop encourages that.
And that's part of it.
House
definitely.
Terms, even. Like, house in jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's kind of that little mini culture that develops when you're playing one game. Not even continuing it through a series of games, but just if the four of us played a game right now that we have never played, there'd be a little subculture that we
develop.
Yeah,
by the end of the game, there would definitely be that.
You are the characters that are yourselves, and the interactions are going to be entertaining or interesting, hopefully.
Yeah, and for concept, part of the tension of the game, since it is this sort of guessing game, there wasn't a huge rush to make decisions. Like, I think when they're playing other games, they probably need to edit a little bit more or be careful of, like, analysis paralysis. But for concept, a lot of the game is in the, oh my god, it's taking them so fucking long.
Yeah. Just guess.
When they take the break, is that, like, do they do the interview segments then, or do they just wait until the end and then do them all?
No, so they do one round of interviews and then a second round of interviews at the end.
So it's kind of like, what are you expecting, and then what happened? Interviews, or do they...
Yeah, so the show is really modeled after a lot of other sort of gaming shows, like, you know, reality shows or like, people playing pool.
Yeah.
Kind of game shows. So they follow that model of talking in the present tense, even though the thing has already happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's more dynamic when you cut it together.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we played the first half, and then the producer had questions that were sort of leading us to answer, so we'd be talking on the points in the game that are interesting.
How did you feel when, you know, this opposition player did this thing, and you're like, oh, I was so upset. Like,
and then you try to answer,
I can't believe he did that. Like,
I don't think he's about to do that.
That's one of my favorite things about watching, like, King of the Nerds. That's one of the reality shows we like a lot. But things like that is trying to, you can basically, I like to watch them with an eye for what they're wearing. And if they are, like, let's say they're doing a challenge where they get wet.
Yeah.
So it's like, are they wet or are they not wet when they said this? And so, like,
just had a shower.
But I mean, it's interesting because but they do, like, I've always wondered, like, I wish that they would put out, I feel like if reality shows or even tabletop put out a behind the scenes kind of idea where you could hear the questions being asked and see the timing, it might be interesting.
That'd make a good reality show.
That's actually, it's one of the things I always wonder about, and one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you about it is that you do that interview thing, and to me I'm like, man, if I've been playing a game for a half an hour and I was supposed to just sit down and do an interview about something that happened 30 minutes ago, you know, the first move that I made in the game, I'd be like, I don't fucking remember that.
Yeah.
So, do they show you
so
playback,
like,
at all?
Oh, no, no.
Okay.
I mean, for me, it felt pretty compact. And I think when you are being filmed and, you know, at a minimum a 500,000 people are going to watch it, you remember things a little bit more distinctly than just like, hey, it's Friday night and I had 8 beers. You know, I might forget the game. In concept, again, is a sort of like a very focused game because it's on you to get the other people to guess. So it certainly wasn't hard for me to remember. And honestly, the sort of little confessional interview things, for me, that was, like, funny and easy and fun because it's what I'm more used to, of just, like, here's a thing that happened. Make a joke about it right now. Like,
that's what I do.
That's
what you do.
I normally play a video game or board games for people's entertainment. But, you know, I look near a camera and say jokes all the time.
Maybe we should talk about concept a little, because we've been talking about the game, but we haven't really talk about what the game is or explain the how it works.
Yeah. It's like charades.
It's a conceptual game,
but not.
It's I think it's kind of supposed to be charades without moving your body, which right. we failed at yeah. in the show. I
charades
did.
For nerds who want to just have that lowest level of activity.
There's a board. Well, so there's a lot of categories, and it's all. I mean, the categories that are on the board cover almost anything a thing can be, like yes. Color, shape. Size, there's professions, there's gender.
Shapes that would indicate half, or the top, or the bottom, or...
left, right.
Right. Places and colors as well.
So, like, and you're putting pieces onto those indicators to try to help the other people guess what it is. It's almost, you draw a card like charades, you have a thing yeah. you're trying to get everyone to guess... And you're putting pieces on the indicators to try to get them, and it makes me think of Mastermind, that game where you're trying to get people to guess yeah. the colors, yeah. and you're giving them nonverbal clues as to which of the colors is exactly right and which is close. Yeah. So
if the card you pulled or picked had Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, you might put a piece on
girl,
historical or fictional person, and then girl, and then the color white. And then you might put seven pieces on man and short.
Yeah. And that might get somebody to guess it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
It's nice because, I mean, they have rules for competition, but it's not really designed to be a competitive game. It's really kind of designed to be a cooperative, let's just have fun trying to guess this stuff.
Yeah.
Before you went on the show, I mean, I assume they told you when they're like invited you to be on the show. They told you what game they were
yeah,
going to have you play.
Yeah, but there was a last minute switch, so I didn't play Concept before that day.
Okay,
so I was going to do a different episode, and then I'm not sure all what happened behind the scenes. But
can you tell us what episode that was you were going to do, or is that a secret?
No, I don't think it matters. It was. I'm not going to remember the names of the game because I didn't end up test playing them because I never went. I think it was just a schedule problem, and also Will and the producer realizing, oh, this is a game that requires like people to be more very creative and in the moment.
More improv-y kind of, yeah.
So Joseph would be good at that.
Yeah. They had a couple other comedians on there as well.
Yeah.
Which made sense, I think, for that group.
I will say something interesting. So I was working in sales. I mean, I'm a game producer now, but mm-hmm. before I was in sales. And I was in sales when Eldersign was on, and I think X-Wing was also on. Those are the two games
X-Wing,
we've had.
Yeah.
Those are the two games we've had on tabletop. And both times, what happens is 8 to 10 months before it's going to be on, maybe I'm wrong in the timing, but it seemed like it was that long ahead, they let you know they're considering your game. And then they let you know a little after that that you are definitely going to be on. And one of the reasons is after when they made the first season, they didn't really do this as much. They didn't give as much warning. And so we didn't always have... People didn't have the game in stock.
Yeah.
And when they realized... I think the sales numbers for most publishers go into like 1,000% increase once your game is on tabletop.
Yeah.
But only in that like week or 2 week period right after. So if you don't have games, you're fucked. You've just lost all those sales. And so what happened to us with Eldersign... I mean, FFG has this policy of supply and demand where we should always have more demand than supply.
Okay.
Just in general. That's good for sales. I mean, it really is.
Sure.
And so we, at the time, we had no, tabletop was new. We had no idea it was going to cause that kind of sales rush. And so the next time they came around and they were like, okay, we're doing this other game. We were like, we were ready, man. Like we had printings, we had like things, entire schedules were shifted to make sure we had enough games because it paid off.
I know that at the Source, which is our local super awesome game store.
Yep.
That if there's an episode of Tabletop, and there have been a few where I've watched them, like, I want that game.
Mm-hmm.
And they talked about how they, you know, it's like if you didn't go within about a day of that episode being released,
Amazon was running lightning deals. Amazon started working with Tabletop. I don't know if they actually got inside information or if they were just paying attention, but they were coming to us because that was one of my clients, and they would say, "We know that we're gonna have Tabletop Day, which is now a holiday, and things like that too. And so we want to do lightning deals on the games that have been featured in seasons past and this season. And so give us a bunch of money, and then we'll, you know, that's Amazon."
There was like a 2 month period where you could not find Small World in the Twin Cities, at least. It just
because they
played. That was the game that everyone wanted that no one had, and even online sources were pretty dried up.
The game that I got hosed on was Takedo.
Oh yeah.
Which actually that was hard. That was impossible to get before it went on tabletop, and it went on tabletop while it was still out of print. Which, if I was the game maker, I'd be like, God damn it!
That's one of those things that they started, they realized, I think it's one of those, like, with great power comes great responsibility, where they started realizing what kind of effect they had on sales. And because, I don't know, I'm sure people would disagree. I genuinely feel tabletop is good for the game industry, and I think that they help, and that they've been, I know people have varying opinions on everything. I mean, that's just, I think.
Nerds have strong opinions.
I know. But I think that not only are they good for us, I think they have the best interests of the game community in mind and at heart. And I think that when they realized they had power over the sales figures, they were like, we gotta be smart, and we gotta help out everybody and not just be like, oh, fuck you guys, you can't have this game. It's been out of print for 10 years, but it's fun, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, I'm sure with anything, and I'm not privy to all these decisions, but I mean, there's a balance. It is entertainment, and they want to have, they're committed to having good games.
Yeah.
So this is utter speculation on my part, but I kind of feel like if they found a game they like, it's in their schedule, they have a bunch of other things, like, we really want this person to play, they're available this day. It's the publisher's job to find more games somehow.
And they know now. I mean, it's a known quantity.
We're in the, I'm hoping it's not a bubble that bursts because it's my, like, you know, livelihood. But, like, we are in a board game boom, like a hobby game boom. Not even just board games, but, like, specifically, like, crunchy, many-piece hobby games.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine the people. I mean, they must have a waiting list a mile long to even that they want to put games on, because there's so many great games and they're just coming out with more and more all the time.
Yeah, I mean, they put a lot of work into finding just the right game.
Yeah.
And I think it is not, they can't play any old game.
Right.
And I think that they want to represent tabletop games in as broad a way as they can, without getting too much into RPG, because I think they feel really strongly that that's a different thing.
It is. That's pencil and paper.
Different, you know, kind of concentration, different kind of gameplay. And, you know, I think they are aware of the fans in the kind of balance they want in terms of games that are family-friendly, games that are really, really simple and easy. Like, Concept is a very simple game.
Yeah.
And getting as complex as they can. So I think they have a lot to balance.
The audience for Concept is anyone. Anyone can play Concept.
Yeah.
A person who isn't super imaginative. Absolutely filthy game, or with a five-year-old.
Absolutely.
Or, you could be filthy with a five-year-old, but why?
I don't recommend
that.
One thing that I think is, and I would love to hear your take on this, is I think from the outsider's perspective, from a fan's perspective, it feels like it's this indie, like, oh, we're just playing games, and, like, there's a camera guy, you know, like, and maybe there's a set, but it's not. And would you say that it's more of a machine? Like, is it an actual, like, television production? I mean, I think with web series, we all assume that they're so fly by night, but
no, this has never ever been fly by night.
Yeah.
So it started as a part of Felicia Day's Geek and Sundry channel.
Okay.
And that was the Google initiative that has gone now to give channels a boatload of actual production money to make really nice looking things on YouTube. And the idea of Tabletop is, let's do a show like Boyan in particular has mentioned, like pool shows.
Yeah.
Where we watch it, but it looks really slick. We watch people play the game and talk about it, but it looks slick. It looks nice. It's shot in HD.
Mm-hmm.
So if people watch it on television, it's always going to look really, really crisp and nice. It's always been super professional people.
Yeah.
Just the way they present the games, and they'll take those pauses, and they'll show you the pictures of the cards. So you really can... If you want to understand the game, you actually, I think, can get a very good understanding of the game off of what they do.
And then I think, I don't know if a lot of people pay close enough attention or know or care, but the first two seasons, it was Geek and Sundry. And Geek and Sundry has been bought by Legendary, just like Nerdist.
Oh, yeah.
Bought by Legendary. So both Geek and Sundry and Nerdist are under Legendary. So a lot of geek things that are being produced, I think they're being presented with... in indie spirit, because they are being produced by people who truly love these things, but are professionals, you know, actors, producers, writers, camera people, everything. They're all professionals. None of it is fly by night. And at this point, legendary entertainment is behind it.
I think that too, it's a lot of us, it's hard to get our heads around the idea that with the new media, I mean, web series is not, in the webisode was like a joke for a while. Like, oh, I have a web series. Oh, fuck you, I have a podcast. Like, I mean, it's, but now, like, web series is a thing that actually can have a lot of money poured into it, and YouTube videos even. So it's not like it's just, I think it's easy for us to assume that it's some guy in their basement, you know.
Yeah,
but
and
it's,
I think all that is going to break down, because at the point where you have, like, Yahoo producing Community,
right,
nobody's referring to the latest season of Community. There's a web series that Yahoo is putting
out. Have you seen
out,
the latest webisode of Community?
To me, it's a show.
Yeah.
And that's what,
it's
that's
just
what
how
tabletop
show,
is.
It's
that's
how the show gets
is.
Delivered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
it's just
and where
consumption.
It, it exists on your computer, which you can make on your, go on your television real easy, like, you know.
Yeah, sure.
It's blurred. There's no lines in between that now. Do you think that, like, tabletop being bought, Nerdist being bought, you know, by a larger company, and the availability of resources, not just money, but like higher production value, people that are professionals in their fields,
mm-hmm.
in making this end product. Do you think that that is like a legitimate, is legitimizing nerd culture, or is it just monetizing and monopolizing? Like, do you think it adds legitimacy to
what we
would call maybe nerd culture?
What we like.
I don't think of it as legitimizing. I think of it, I mean, it's, these are all people who really like it. This is not like a cartoon of like an old-timey producer with a cigar going, what are those fucking nerds like? Get some of that.
My
daughter loves D&D.
It is more the people who love it and do this kind of thing anyway and say, how I want to make that instead of some other crappy thing that the...
And the audience is there for it, and they want it, and they're hungry for
it. Make. Yeah, so I think it is more making things that have been subcultures more aware to the whole culture.
And it certainly does seem like Will is a big fan of tabletop gaming. That,
dude.
Yes, well, it grew out of his appreciation for that already.
I met Will at Gen Con. Can I just say, it's like one of the greatest things ever. So I met Will at Gen Con. I was stacking games, and I hear his voice behind me just say, that's a nice stack of games. And people have been, because we Eric Knight and I do fancy stacks at Gen Con.
Yeah.
And I turned around and I was like, and I just went, and I'm like, you're Will Wheaton. And he goes, I am. Who are you? I'm like, Holly Clover. And he's like, nice to meet you. I'm like, uh-huh. And we just stood there and I'm like, sure is hot today. And he's like, yeah, it's pretty hot out there. It's hotter in Indianapolis. It's humid. I'm like, yep. Back to games for me, and I just turned around, and it was just, he was so nice. And
damn it, Molly,
to,
if you'd been more interesting, we could have had him on our podcast.
He went to every booth, though.
Yeah.
That's the thing is, I mean, he was going around to every booth, every publisher, talking to every person, even the guy that had, like, their one game on their one table. And I that's the thing is, like, I really feel like it's one of the reasons, I mean, legitimized, is because he is the real deal. Like, he's been playing. He loves it. He's not some celebrity who's jumping on the bandwagon of nerd culture.
No.
From a consumer perspective, consumer of nerd culture on the internet, he comes across as a very accessible, friendly, like, internet nerd nice guy.
A real guy.
A real person. I mean, he's really easy to empathize with and to, I mean, as soon as he starts talking, you're kind of on his side.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're kind of with him as soon as he starts going.
I think it can be easy for people to sort of lose the narrative thread of kind of his career or not ever pay attention, which is fine too.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, he took a lot of abuse for being Wesley
on Star
Trek.
For being a character that everybody hated,
and
which wasn't his fault.
His
being a
fame
child actor.
Is built on being himself.
Yeah.
The first thing I heard about Will Wheaton was a couple years after Star Trek when a friend said, hey, Will, did you know Will Wheaton has a blog? And he's like really honest and makes jokes about Wesley? And at the time, that was like a mind-blowing thing that a person would do that.
Yeah.
And I've talked to Will about this in person. His Twitter bio is, he's just this guy,
Which is
a Hitchhiker's Guide reference.
Yep.
But also, that is how he has become Will Wheaton of the internet. And especially younger people don't remember that. Well, he just started blogging and writing books about being a geek before it was even remotely profitable. Mm-hmm. And his goal has been to be as honest, and I'm just a guy, He's aware that he has, you know, mm-hmm. a large audience, so that makes it sometimes more difficult to just be a guy.
Mm-hmm.
But he tries to just be himself and just do the things he likes.
My favorite, not to be like jerking off over Will Wheaton, but like my favorite thing about him, honestly, is his relationship with his son, because that's me and my dad. My dad married my mom when he was just 30, and I was 12, and my brother was 9, and I'm saying, like, I know me, I'm a lot to deal with. And my dad never made me feel like he was my stepdad. He's my dad from day one, and it was awesome. And like, so when I read about him being like, oh, me and my son, blah, 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 and things like that, and I'm just like, it just, I can't explain how it's totally sentimental, but I'm just like, I'm glad someone else gets that, because it feels so good to have someone just be like, oh, hey, kid, yeah, I love you. I don't even have to, but I'll be your dad. Yeah. Like, it's great. It's really great.
So if you're listening to this, Will Wheaton, because you're a friend of Joseph and you want to listen to your friend's stuff, because I know you do that, Will, because you're a nice, genuine guy. We just want to point out, we know that you don't believe in God. So
I promise I'll be cool. I promise I'll be cool, Will Wheaton.
That's a promise she can't keep. I'm just saying that now. I know. I've seen her interact with...
You should have seen her when Trace Ballou was on the podcast.
I was pretty cool.
You were cool. Yeah, you were.
I kept it down. I was sorry.
Yeah, I was there when you met Jerry Messersmith, and that's just...
I ran away.
Yes, she did.
Really?
Yes, she did.
For a second,
I thought you were going to say, I ran him over.
No, I ran away, and I hid in a Cuban Space Lounge because I couldn't handle it. I was like, I like your music, and I ran away.
You guys know that he's willing to be on our podcast.
I'm not afraid of him. I'm afraid of what I might say because I'm a retard.
He's a walking hug who sings.
I know. Yes, I can use that word. I have autism.
Oh, can you?
Okay, so we're going to move on to 5 questions. Joseph, you are going to be one of the first people to answer our brand new 5 questions
that
we are debuting here at Convergence 2015.
Kind of our third birthday podcast. Yeah. We're changing it up.
Nice.
See, the thing is that, you know, people sort of stopped sending us in answers to the first 5 questions,
okay.
So we figured that we've run out of people that will do that.
That's
so,
right.
So it's time.
Yeah, blame the audience. Time,
yeah, that's right. You people,
shame, audience,
aren't
shame.
So we figure we need new ones. So we've got 5 new ones. We did send them to you ahead of time so that you wouldn't be completely shocked.
Yes, let's see.
So,
remember.
Take that for
Nick, what's the first question?
Our first question is, what is a movie you'll stop and watch anytime it's on?
The Star Wars movies, to be honest, all of them. Even the prequels. Come at me, haters. And also I'd say like Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead.
Oh, sure.
Those are 2 movies that, yeah.
Yeah.
They're just fun.
Yeah.
No matter
where. To me, they have layers and layers.
Yeah.
They do.
Layers.
It's true.
You gain something every time you rewatch those movies, I feel. Like,
yeah.
You really come away with, oh, that was a. That line, they used that.
And there are little beats and moments that stick with me as I go through my day.
Even more than Shaun of the Dead, I think Hot Fuzz is one of those movies that I find improves on rewatching.
It's more subtle than
The
first time I saw it, I didn't love it. And I was like, aw. And then I watched it again. I was like, I'm an idiot because this is amazing.
Yeah. It's a movie about trying not to be too perfect, which is a really nice message for a movie.
Yeah.
Like, you're right, Hot Fuzz, I'll relax. But wait, you're a perfect movie. Hey.
What are you up to?
Wrong. All right.
Question 2. What is your geekiest or most prized possession?
That's a hard one. but I have a British DVD of Genesis of the Daleks that I bought in England, and Tom Baker signed at a signing in England.
Oh, boy.
That's pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah. I would maybe make that a Horcrux.
I would do that. Now, this is a personal preference, but do you think Genesis of the Daleks is like the best Daleks episode?
Of
all of Doctor Who? Okay, good. Because I did too, and I'm not as big of a Doctor Who.
Wait, Clara's a Dalek?
Asylum of the Daleks is fine.
I'm not as big of a Doctor Who nerd as you are, but I still feel like that's the best.
I think Dalek stories are always a challenge, and I think that one has, you know, I think with the introduction of Davros and some of the moral issues and, you know, great companions, great performances from everyone.
And that moment when the Doctor can destroy the Daleks and he doesn't.
Yes.
And you're like, no!
Yeah. Have I the right? Yeah, it's such a great little British quote.
Yes.
Have I the right?
I think that,
you mean, do you have the right? Is that what you're
I think that the Daleks, like much like the Joker for Batman, they're the most iconic or kind of quintessential villain. And with that comes some of the very best stories, but also a lot of stories monopolizing on the fact that they're iconic and some of the best stories.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, like the Joker and the Batman, if you got rid of the Daleks, what would the Doctor do? I mean, there's like
Well, there's Cybermen or something.
Well, sure, but you know.
There's plenty of other monsters.
There's all kinds of monsters.
Plenty of monsters to go around.
Humans are the real monsters.
All right, so question number three. Question number three. Which supernatural, magical, or all-powerful being, fictional or historical, do you wish was real?
There were historical, all-powerful beings?
Well,
podcast?
That's like a real religion versus
actual religion that people believe versus something out of a book.
I think Obi-Wan Kenobi. Ghost Obi-Wan Kenobi to give me advice.
Yeah.
That would be great.
Force ghost.
Yeah,
force ghost.
Also, and this is important, the Force and lightsabers would be real.
Yeah. I'd really be fine with it if they weren't in Obi-Wan.
Just
give me advice on
that's
my
like
life.
Schizophrenia, isn't
wait,
that just...
No, hold on.
Like
Gazoo style where only you can see him, or like everyone can see him and he's giving you advice, but like we all know he's there.
Oh, no, I would want to be the only one.
Gazoo.
I'm not comfortable with comparing to fucking Gazoo.
That could get annoying after a while. It might be like you're at the buffet and he's like, Joseph, do you really need more mashed potatoes?
Well, see, I don't think he would be because he's very choosy about what he bothers to tell Luke. So I think it would still be intriguing. Like he tells Luke to go to Dagobah. He tells Luke to use the Force, or else Luke would not have destroyed the Death Star.
He doesn't tell Luke not to kiss his sister. That's for sure.
Right. He doesn't bother to say the Emperor's going to shoot lightning at you. Yeah. Here's how to block it.
She's your twin. Don't make out with her. Like, that would have been a good heads
I really
up,
feel like Yoda and Obi-Wan failed in that whole, here's how to defend yourself against Force lightning part of the...
So I think they don't get into the nitty-gritty. I think they won't touch the salad bar decisions.
All right.
Maybe there's rules.
Just the big picture.
Maybe there's, like, a certain number of times that, like, they're waiting for... Like, it's like one of those freemium games where you're waiting for your time clock to regenerate so you can hit it again.
Yeah.
I can't go tell him for 2 more minutes. Like,
I listed it. Yeah, like, do that podcast. Do that podcast.
It's when people ask why you moved... out to the West Coast, you can just tell them, oh, my Obi-Wan ghost. Said, go to California.
Go to the Los Angeles system.
Question number four. Say religion is gone. What are the biggest problems humanity now faces?
The one biggest problem.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was going to say guns and internet comments, but I don't know if I want to choose. Guns are pretty bad, but so are internet comments. That was the one thing I was going to say about tabletop is that I knew that there'd be hateful things on YouTube because it's watched by...
It's YouTube. And it's YouTube. Yeah.
So there has to be. But I was entertained at the thing that people... I got a couple of just like, fuck you, you suck or whatever.
You know,
with no context. So they're worthless. But... Several people were mad that I was short, which I found really funny.
What a bizarre thing to
do. Fuck this short asshole.
I think they felt tricked by the episode, and there was no trickery, and it was just like we're sitting at the table, and then there's the interview shots, and then at the end of the episode, we're all standing together. So people are like, holy shit, he's short! And
I took his word on this game!
Why? And I don't know why it was a problem. Like,
I've been lied to!
It's like heightism. There's nothing wrong with being short.
I have to think if you want any kind of fame, like, I personally, one of the reasons I don't is, like, I can't imagine being held up to the scrutiny of the general fucking public. Like,
I am not claiming to be super famous by any means, but I make enough noise on the internet now that I am starting to get more that kind of commentary, so I'm trying to have a good attitude about it.
Well, you certainly should have a good attitude about somebody calling you short. I think because the funny thing is I've known you so long.
It's
I don't
not
think
a choice.
It's not a choice. I've known you so long. I don't think of you as short because I know Wendy.
Yeah.
There's
nothing wrong. Yeah, my first reaction was I'm not short. I'm like average, maybe the low end of average, but I'm average. And I was like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't
what a
matter
weird
at
thing.
All. It's
you're,
not an
you're,
insult.
You're
if
too short to be
like
able to play this
height.
Fucking game.
Yes.
You're Minnesota short. You're Minnesota short. But
you're New York normal.
Yeah, that's right. Just take comfort in the fact that, like, if you were a woman on the internet, it'd be like 10 times worse. So, we're pretty good. Yeah,
did anyone threaten to rape you?
No.
No. Hey,
all right.
I'm
a win.
Too short to rape.
Well, I got a new Bill joke I just wrote.
Oh, dear.
There's the title of your next book.
Too short to rape. Question 5. Joseph, what is your favorite quote?
There are many quotes that I think about a lot, but I will share one from my friend Tom Poole, who was a writer in the Twin Cities, and he passed away a couple of years ago. When he passed away, we did a like celebration of his life, not a like funeral thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through his Facebook, which I think it's great that Facebook keeps people's profiles there. I went through his Facebook and put together like this sort of like a tone poem with all of these great quotes.
Mm.
He's a very witty guy, and he had a post about he had several posts over the years that he was on Facebook about cleaning his yard from dog shit after the snow melted.
Yeah.
And that there were just like mountains and mountains of shit. And he had a post there where he was sort of complaining that other people complained about the amount of shit that they had to pick up. And he had a quote that, maybe this is just me, but picking up shit is its own reward. And that quote has kind of, helped me through when I don't like maintaining stuff. I always like, I want to build a new thing. And
yeah.
So much of life is just doing what needs to be done. And like, when I was cleaning my house to move to Los Angeles, and I just like, I want to move. That's the point. I don't want to clean my house and
yeah.
do all this stuff. And that quote really got stuck in my head and helped me get through it. Of like, nope, just doing the shit that you're supposed to do is the reward.
Picking
it's
up shit
now.
Is its own reward.
Yeah,
that's
the shit is
amazing.
Gone now.
That's a great quote.
Yes.
Well, Joseph, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely.
Folks can find you at josephscrimshaw.com.
Mm-hmm.
Also, your Obsessed podcast is now on a bigger podcast
yeah,
network thing.
Feral Audio.
Feral Audio. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's
and,
great.
And I've done it a couple of times. Molly's done it.
I did.
And I'll be on one soon, I think.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So anyway, that's pretty exciting. If you enjoy our new five questions, you have an opportunity to answer them by sending your answer to 5questions@geekswithoutgod.com. Of course, if you don't feel like doing that, if that's too much work, it's hardly any work at all to rate us on iTunes. It's so goddamn simple.
It's easier than your mom.
It's
damn.
That's
5 stars.
Would listen again. Like a seashell from the ocean.
So yeah, do that or answer our 5 questions if you want. Thanks, Joseph. And we're done. Bye.
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 Hey, Will Wheaton, I'm just saying, Joseph likes us, you'd probably like us too. Did that sound desperate?
We're geeks, without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority, we don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
I'm thinking I should be out there making the fucking apple pie. I only have an hour, asshole.